Back together again, you and I, kicking off a brand new week, Monday, October 23rd, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We highlighted some announced service cuts and fare increases affecting Metro North train customers with Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong. Connecticut News Junkie and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill stopped by for his regular update. And I also had a few more thoughts about the current war between Israel and Hamas. I want to get a quick note in here with Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong, who joins us. Tony, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. Sorry for being late.
No, that's all right. No, you're busy. I get it, Tony. I got it. I wanted to get a quick couple minutes with you on this whole Metro North thing, and because I know you were deeply involved in this, and the notion of, I guess now, Tony, fares are going up, surprise, surprise, but what are they doing about some of the service cutbacks that we're going to see here?
Well, I think I'm deeply upset about it because the commuters that I've talked to that are sitting in the platform going to work felt as though that this was a fait accompli, that fares were going to rise and service was going to be reduced. And they didn't see any change to that. And when I told them about public hearings and how this whole process was undertaken, they shrugged their shoulder and they said, this is just a done deal. They're going through the motions. And you know what? At first, Paul, I thought that's a lot of cynicism and that, you know, we're trying to get transparency and accountability and we're trying to represent the best thing we can to improve commuter services, to get cars off the roads, to reduce climate initiatives, that you know, people need to believe that the DOT and our rail services has to be an essential part. But ultimately, what came out of it was fares are increasing, services decreased, and the justification was COVID change user routines, but not accounting the challenge of people that need to get to and from work dependability and stay off the roads that are always congested. But the ultimate insult, insult is the fact that, you know, they anticipated that this was going to get some pushback if people truly knew. And the general public. So guess what? This news came out last Friday, late afternoon.
Well, that's
not
when
even
you
the bleep in the news.
Well, you know, Tony, if you're going to dump something Friday afternoon when everybody is happy hour, you know that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the focus would have been the incredible work by DOT workers with the bridge installation down in Saugatuck. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Don't get me wrong. CTDOT workers work hard on the road to make sure our roads are safe. They need all the support that they can. But somehow the administration and the heads of people in regards to policy have totally missed the boat on this. They think they're doing the right thing, but counter to what the goals are, reducing air pollution, reducing congestion on the roads. We need to make an investment to our rail systems. Instead, what you've done is increase fares, reduce services. That's a way to kill a railroad because you're going to justify the reduction and then make more cuts because guess what? That's the same rationale you use to make these cuts. Damn. It's a way to kill a railroad. Unfortunately, instead of bolstering it, making the investment that's necessary, and to add the ultimate insult, why I'm so emotional about this is when a majority of the commuters live in Fairfield County and depend on the rail system to get to and from work, not one public hearing was held.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Through my insistence, they granted a pop-up meeting, which I attended and was scantily attended, scantily presented. And so people, again, let me go back to the train platform, Paul. Yeah. This is sums it up. People, every single person it seems I talked to, they shrugged their shoulders and they said, this is Connecticut. And you know what? We're just a captive audience and we're just going to have to take it and deal with it. And that to me is the shame in this whole process that people don't believe they have a say and that this was a done deal from the beginning of the proposal.
Well, we'll see how this shakes out. Maybe people can shake the trees again. Tony, thank you for your attention to this. We appreciate it, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, thanks. There you go. All right, back to open phones to wrap this sucker up next half hour. When we do that, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Our regular Monday afternoon contributor Terry Cowgill joins us. You can see his Connecticut-based stuff at the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com. Also blogs nationally where the hordes wait to attack him. We'll get to that momentarily at substack.com. Red meat for mushy moderates. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon. Doing very well, thank you.
I know one thing you said you're writing on, you're contemplating a piece on this report, Terry, that came out a couple of weeks ago, and I did a good couple of hours on it on the air here. This report from the Dalio group, of course, Mr. Dalio and his wife, very prominent folks with their donated charity and stuff in Fairfield County. And Terry, as I remember, basically it said one out of five youths in this state between 14 and 26, which is a pretty broad spectrum, were either considered at risk or disconnected. That's a frightening number, roughly 20%.
Yeah, it is. And you know, you mentioned that it was ages 14 to 26, and I thought that was a very interesting cohort for them to choose, you know, because a lot of these studies are done with kids of school age or kids in high school, or you do it with targeting adults. In this case, they went high school and young adult, which, and I think those two age groups go together really well. And yeah, it was depressing, certainly, because of course, you know, at risk is defined as struggling to finish high school on time, or even struggling, say, with a suspension or an expulsion, and disconnected have actually just dropped out, or they might even be in jail. And they say that they believe it's about 119,000 young people in Connecticut. And the thing that really struck me, and because I sat in on a sort of like a press conference via Zoom with the people at the some of the people at the Dalio Education. And it was interesting because they were all very earnest people. And I think they were, but they mentioned the economic piece, and I told them, I said, you know, if I was writing a column on this, I think that would, I think the lead would write itself, because they say, according to the study, that all of this this grim news that's in the report is likely costing Connecticut more than $5 billion in gross domestic
product. I saw that. That's a stunning amount of money. Stunning.
And between $650 million and $750 million in lost tax revenues. So there's something in there that I think people, I think this is a very much a study that will be a very interesting in a bipartisan way. You know, I mean, nobody likes to see $5 billion in gross domestic product lost. And, you know, other people don't want to see 650 or seven, you know, $750 million in lost tax revenue. So I thought it was really stark and depressing. But there might be, you know, a good thing. There might be good things to come of it. And that's certainly what I hope. The next phase will be the test. What to do about it?
Yeah, exactly, Terry. And that's how I talked about it on the air. So what do we do here? And I mean, look, we're always going to have a society where there's going to be troubled individuals at a young age. I mean, I'm sure that goes back thousands of years. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that years ago, you know, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, when he was working amidst the Great Society programs, you know, this is the kind of thing he warned about, that if you don't get this rectified at an early age, it kind of gets out of control here. And, you know, Terry, I'm sure looking 10, 20, 30 years down the road, we're going to find enough people who are within that group now to say, hey, I had it bad, but I straightened myself out, and now I'm living comfortably, and I own a company or whatever. But that's the scary part, Terry. I mean, we're talking about one out of five of the people in that age range. And you're right. What, honestly, I mean, you can dump money at that stuff, but we've been doing that for 50 years. I don't know how you fix this.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, but if you can get at kids younger, I think, you know, I mean, part of the problem is just that the family unit just isn't as strong as it used to be.
Yeah.
Across the board. And of course, that's always a problem. And, you know, trying to fix that is like, I don't know, it's like trying to put toothpaste back into the tube. You know, there's got to be ways to strengthen families that will help some of this stuff, or help alleviate some of these things. You know, you mentioned Daniel Patrick Moynihan before,
yeah,
and he was the one also who invented the phrase "defining deviancy down."
Yes,
as I recall,
with his wearing his bow tie. Yes,
yes, exactly. And you know, that's the problem, is that the more pervasive these maladies or pathologies become, the more acceptable that they become on some level, and then you do start defining deviancy down. So I don't really know exactly what they're going to do about it, but at least we have the data now, and the Boston Consulting Group was hired to do it, and they're very good at crunching numbers, and they relied on a lot of data from various state departments and some nonprofits as well.
Terry Cowgill is the guest. You can read him in the Connecticut News Junkie or on Substack. And, Terry, you tell me now, you have survived, is what you told me in an email earlier today, because the army of defenders of our Madam Vice President, Ms. Kamala Harris, has not descended on you, you say, after you wrote a piece about her.
Yeah, I did get a little bit of pushback on Threads, which is, you know, kind of the knockoff of Twitter, and people, you know, complaining about a double standard, and that if you go after her, well, why weren't the other male vice presidents also, you know, gone after by pundits like me? And I tried to explain to them, you know, are you old enough to remember Dan Quayle?
Thank you. I mean, Terry, what are these people thinking? Were they not around for Dick Cheney, who's had about, what, 15 heart attacks? She's got worse numbers than Dick Cheney. But no, because, Terry, time started yesterday. Didn't you know that?
Yeah. Well, I think that at least with Dick Cheney, you know, you could say to yourself, well, I don't like his policies.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody questioned his effectiveness and intelligence in that office, because it you know, he really was, and he was in Cheney was in a unique position because it was obvious that he didn't aspire to be president.
No,
and that really relieves a lot of the tension associated with that office. But I mean, Dan Quayle just was relentlessly ridiculed in just about every, you know, all from, you know, how you spell potato and the time he went after Murphy Brown. And
yeah.
I mean, it was just,
oh, God.
You remember that, of course,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, Kamala Harris just, you know, I don't think she speaks very well off the cuff.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of memes and how she was made fun of on the Fox News. But a lot of times, when she tries to explain something, it just sounds like a word salad. And I think part of it relates to the fact that she was an attorney general and a DA.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to lay out a broad vision for the future of the country when you're in those jobs. You're focused on law enforcement. But now she's in a role that's much more expansive. And I think she has a little trouble trying to make that transition. And it's understandable.
And finally, I know on the national scene you wanted to talk about what I term, Mr. Cowgill, the ongoing circular firing squad in D.C., that, of course, being my Republican Party. You know, Terry, when there's disagreement among Democrats, it pops up for a day or two, right? And then it's gone. I mean, boom, you don't hear it anymore. The Democratic leaders, they drop the hammer and it's shut up. But this whole thing, Terry, with the Republicans, I'm telling you, they're handing the Democrats a campaign issue on a silver platter. That issue being issue one, as the great John McLaughlin used to say, they can't govern. This is mind-numbing.
Well, it really is. And, you know, the ironic thing about it is that, you know, when you're out of when you're a party that's out of power, you struggle to find a strong leader a lot of times, right? Because it's hard to attract people to be in the leadership position in Congress when they're going to be in the minority and they know they can't really get stuff done. Right now, I mean, the Republicans, they have a majority in the House, and they can't find a leader. It really is astonishing. And I think the concern on Capitol Hill is that this could have long-term ramifications for the party. At this point, I would be shocked if next year the Republicans held on to their slim majority in the House, because every Democrat who runs against a Republican in the House of Representatives next year is just going to bash them over the head with this leadership fight and say, you know, you guys, you couldn't run a two-car funeral, much less run the entire House. So, yeah, this is bad news. There's no question. And as I suggested earlier in my email, I came across a new word, a new phrase.
Okay.
And because we've all heard of snafu.
Yes.
All of these military acronyms, many of which are too vulgar for terrestrial radio. So I will want to do that. But
that's good.
You know, foobar.
Yes.
And it just goes on and on.
Uh-huh.
But goat rodeo.
I've
heard, and I have you heard of that one?
No, I haven't, but now I'm going to start to use it.
Well, apparently, it was that is also a military term.
Ah.
And there was, it was called a goat and then the F word.
Okay.
And it was originally used by military personnel.
Well, there you go.
For fiasco. And it was along the lines of snafu.
Yes.
It could also be a play on the expression of get somebody's goat, to irritate them.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, a goat rodeo. And imagine having a bunch of stubborn animals in there, goats, and trying to, have a rodeo out of it. So yeah, I really like the phrase now. It's going to be a permanent part of my lexicon going forward.
There you go. All right. Listen, keep your head low. Keep your head away, Terry Cowgill, from the defenders of the vice president. And we will talk to you next week, my friend. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care. Terry Cowgill there. You can read him at the Connecticut News Junkie. Or nationally, he writes at Substack.com. You know, sometimes you watch stuff on the news, hear stuff on the radio, or read articles that is so sad, is so out of touch, is so, you read this, and even people who don't have doctorates or PhDs or two or three graduate degrees or whatever, you look at this stuff and something doesn't quite jibe. You know, it's like, well, wait a minute. What am I not getting here? And what I'm not getting here is this, and maybe you're not going to get it either, and you can chime in here at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Over the weekend and actually into this morning and right up to showtime here, on WICC, I'm watching a lot of debate about obviously what's going on in the Middle East, and obviously you talk about it amongst your coworkers, your friends, your family members, especially if you are of the Jewish faith, whether you are a practicing member of the Jewish faith or not, because along with being a religious affiliation, being of the Jewish faith is also for many an ethnic heritage that may go to other parts of the world, but it is what it is. And you watch all this stuff, and it's on, you know, pretty much all the cable news channels, and you read all these blogs and everything, and you read, you know, you hear the talk shows like mine and national shows talk about it, and it makes me, and I don't want to say laugh because it's nothing to laugh over, but there is some sort of, and maybe you feel the same way I do. Maybe you and I can chat about this together and realize we're not the crazy ones out there. You hear about all this saying, you know, a lot of people here in America, a lot of people in D.C. inside the Beltway, a lot of people all around the world saying, well, you know what? You know, depending upon what happens now, you know, as they hold their cocktail glass and eat their, you know, sirloin steaks in some sort of ritzy steakhouse somewhere in New York or D.C. or Chicago or L.A. you hear them say, well, you know, Israel has to think hard about its next move. What? Wait a minute. Wait, well, hold it. Did we have to think hard about our next move after we were attacked on December 7th of 1941? Did we have to think long and hard about what we did, whether you agree or not, after the 9/11 attacks, September 11th of 2001? Huh? I just, over the weekend, and even up until showtime now, up to a few minutes ago, I mean, I've had it up to here, and the up to here mark is wherever you want to make it, on your face, on your head, or whatever. But I don't know about you. Have you noticed this as well? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I don't know what to say. I'm fascinated. I'm disturbed. I'm angry. I'm quizzical about so many of these people saying, hey, well, you know, maybe Israel shouldn't go into Gaza. Maybe they should or shouldn't do this. With all due respect, Mr. American pundit wearing a nice hand-cut suit, who the hell are you to tell Israel what to do? Now, does that mean everything Israel would do in response to this is the right thing perfectly 100% of the time? Probably not. No country's response to being attacked is often 100% polished and works. Nobody's saying that. War is war. But see, herein lies the trouble. A lot of the apologists right now, and oh my God, the college apologists, some of these colleges, not all of them, I've worked for a couple of great universities, but some of these colleges, oh man, one thing we're learning from this, the level of emboldened anti-Israel, anti-Semitic bigots that, and I'm not talking about somebody who wants to discuss the situation. No, you have people cheering for Hamas on college campuses. They're teaching your kids. Boy, do they feel emboldened by that. But to my original point, do you think Israel needs to be lectured by the U.S.? Yes, there are allies. We consider themselves an ally. I got that. The Egyptians now are an ally to Israel and to some point us. The Saudi Arabians are trying to normalize relations in that part of the world. But, man, oh, man, I'm watching this stuff over the weekend, and particularly on, you know, the left-leaning channels, CNN and MSNBC. Well, you know, a ground invasion of Gaza, you know, that could only make things worse. People may die. You think? Again, it is... on some level, an amazing piece of mental and verbal twister that you're seeing come out of this situation now where, you know, where you have people basically warning Israel, who was attacked. And I know the Israel thing with Gaza and the Palestinians has gone on for hundreds. I mean, if you want to go pre-Israel, it goes back thousands of years. I understand that. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm some sort of geopolitical expert in the area. But you know what? A lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people in this situation need to shut up. And I'm talking about from uninformed pundits to certain politicians, some of whom, you know, or still, if you ask them in Congress, hey, how about what Hamas did? Wasn't that horrible? Well, you have to understand. No. Don't give me, whenever you start, well, you have to understand. No. Forget it. Yeah, I just switched you off. No, there are absolutes. And again, we're seeing more and more and more of this over the weekend. Who are they mentioning more and more? Iran. And we've been worried about the Iranians for years between both administrations, Democrats and Republicans. And we're, oh, they're bad. Oh, we can't let the, oh, yeah, oh, Iran, yeah, the mullahs, oh, they're not good. And they're pretty much directing this whole thing. If you don't think so, you got to learn yourself something. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Do you think that Israel really wants to be lectured by the U.S., by England, by France, by Italy, by Spain, by Canada, by, you know, by these countries. I mean, the gall of people. It's mind-numbing. And it is to me either sheer stupidity or willful ignorance when people can't understand what it's like to live in a country that is subjected to missile fire and rocket fire, not just over the past 2 or 3 weeks, but has happened for years and years and years. And again, I'm in no way, shape, or form here. At 2:23 on a Monday, as we start a new week here, I'm in no way, shape, or form here going to say that I understand all the intricacies of this area, all the long-standing alliances and prejudices, many of them accounted to cultural or religious events. But man, I'm over the weekend, I'm soaking all this stuff in, I'm reading this stuff and watching this stuff, and there's nothing worse. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say nothing worse. There are some things worse. But in this situation, you agree with me? Have you watched some of these pundits? Well, you know, the injuries and the victims would just be so horrible in Gaza. All right, yes, it would. Nobody's saying it wouldn't. Who started it? What is Israel supposed to do? You tell me. That's the question. You notice that? That's the question nobody wants to answer. What do they expect Israel to do? Yeah, hi, IDF. Can we come in and talk to you? No, it doesn't work that way. You think Iran and the mullahs there in Tehran who are laughing at this, toasting it with whatever, I guess they can't drink alcohol, but who knows behind the scenes. I mean, honestly, you don't think that they sit back and laugh at the pulling of punches here? And you know what? Good on Israel to say, you know what, we'll do what we're going to do in good time when we want to do it. Now, are they having discussions with the U.S. about how hard to go into Gaza? Well, of course they are. Of course they are. They're not dumb. They weren't, you know, born yesterday. And I love people getting on cable news. Well, you know, what I think Netanyahu should do and what I think Betty Gantz should do. Shut up. This false equivalency, and I have a cut I'm going to play for you later. It's been circulating. It came over the weekend, and MSNBC, using one of their weekend talent, you can tell why they're on the weekend, asking the chief IDF spokesman. I don't know who this gentleman is, his name, but he's on, you know, you can tell he's the equivalent of the Pentagon spokesman that we have here. And her question was like, well, you know, anything you do in return, you know, women and children should be killed, could be killed. And she asked it with, you know, does that bother you? You know, with a straight face. She's sitting there with a straight face like she's reading it off a script. And you could tell the guy's kind of biting his lip, you know, because he's saying to himself, how the hell do you think we got here, lady? It is mind-numbing. What are your thoughts on this? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. If you got a comment on this, you know, again, use your words carefully. You know, if bad language is going to be used and stupid phrases, I'll do it and take the heat for it. But, man, over the weekend and early this morning, right up until showtime, I mean, while in the middle of Chris's news there, I'm watching somebody going, what? Oh, whoa, what are you, nuts? Well, you know, it's a horrible situation in Gaza. Again, whose fault is that? Right now, just ask yourselves that. That's all. It's pretty simple. Whose fault is it? Well, you know, Gaza's tightly controlled by Israel. Yes, because there are people with connections to Hamas and Gaza who want to basically destroy Israel. Any questions? You know, The other thing that bothers me is, well, you know, there's no black and white in this situation. There are shades of gray. No, no. In a lot of things, there is black and white. And not only are you seeing it there, these college campuses. Oh, my God. Now, there were years when conservatives and conservative talk show hosts and conservative organizations, they kept saying, hey, there's a lot of leftist dirtbags on your local college campus. And, of course, we got shouted down by the left. Oh, here you go. Scare tactics again. Really? Really? Scare tactics? And now what do you see? The worst of the worst are out there, and they feel emboldened.